I like a bed that's really firm.
I need something a little softer than that.
Rest easy. With the Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed, you can both adjust your comfort with your sleep number setting.
Can it really help me fall asleep faster?
Yes, by gently warming your feet.
Okay, but can it help keep us asleep?
It senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you effortlessly comfortable. Sleep Number, proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. It's our biggest sale of the year where all beds are on sale. Save 50% on the Sleep Number 360 Limited Edition Smart Bed. Only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
Content. I think that's really cool. Going for walks and stuff and hanging at the beach. And it sounds kind of like I'm 28. That sounds kind of like, okay. But I really do think that that's something very special in life. And I don't think enough people kind of aspire to that. Like when it comes to happiness, I think it is that the little moments in life that are the most special. The Genie Show.
My friends, it's 2020. Can you believe it? This year for me is all about going that little bit deeper. Now, I don't mean that to sound wanky in any way, shape, or form, but I was really reflecting on why happiness is so important to me. And I've been doing a lot of self-development work intentionally over the last 2 to 3 weeks. And one thing that has occurred to me is happiness is a state of mind and joy is a vibration that you can hold. And happiness is a gateway to joy. When we're our most joyous, when we feel good, what happens is we put ourselves in a position where we can actually cultivate the things that we desire the most. So we can manifest abundance. We can manifest all these good things. And you know what? Aside from all of that, feeling joyous, feeling happy, that's a pretty amazing feeling to feel day in, day out, or feel at a particular moment. So this episode of The Genie Show is with someone who's worked in media or has been involved in media over the past 10 to 20 years. I actually met him at a photo shoot at an event I was holding in Australia called the No Hate Campaign. Harry Cook, we connected around that time and he's just an absolute sweetheart. Every time I see him at events in Australia, he's just the warmest guy. And one thing I really learned about him was how brave he was into stepping into who he is and being really truthful about that. We've all had moments where, you know, we kind of hide away who we are in fear of how we will be received. And if you're part of the LGBT community like myself, coming out is really that step where you really step into who you are and accept who you are within yourself, but also to the world. So it's an important step. And even though I say I hope one day it will be a step that doesn't need to be taken, I do acknowledge that it is a step in progress in time and how we've moved along as a society. So without further ado, here's Harry Cook, how he shares with me his journey to coming out, his new book, and everything in between.
Mr. Harry Cook, oh my God, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast because I've known you for ages, but we've only like spoken 3 whole times in our whole life. Did you know that?
Yeah, thank you. First of all, thank you so much for having me. I love you an absolute huge amount. But yeah, we've met like a few times though. We've been like at the LGBT Awards, the No Hate Campaign. But yeah, no, I adore you. Thank you for having me.
Back at you, Harry. Something I learned about you recently, which I'm shocked that I didn't know about you before, because I think that would have cemented our connection in the history of time. You and I both owned a Batman costume when we were young.
Yes.
I mean, you had the gray one. I had the black one, but I was looking at you. I'm like,
The George Clooney one that,
I don't know if it was Clooney, but it was a black one with the yellow symbol and the bat.
Oh, like the old Batman. Well, that's why we're best friends now. That's how it happened. But yeah, no, did you watch Batman as like a kid?
Well, when we migrated to Australia from Sri Lanka in the 80s, the Adam West version was on. I'm like, this boy, like he's wearing tights. He looks graceful. Maybe I can do it. Didn't work out the same way, but.
But great show.
Yeah. How did you get into Batman?
I think my dad watched it. Yeah, the old Adam West, like the old Batman and Robin, like those.
Yeah.
They're so funny. I could still watch them now. Like I think they're amazing. They're so good. They're really, really funny.
He's a timeless superhero, Batman. You're quite a superhero yourself in the Australian LGBTI community. I absolutely adore your coming out story. And I'm really, because that's how I kind of found out about you, because at the time I was about to bring the No Hate Campaign boys down with my old company Bling for their photo shoot in Australia. And then they said, oh, yeah, do you know who Harry Cook is? And they sent me the YouTube clip of you actually coming out on YouTube. I know we talked about this back then, but does that kind of experience seem foreign now in the time that we're in Australia, the fact that we're now marriage equality has been approved? How does that experience feel in the context of things now?
It was such a weird thing to do it back then as well. I think because, and still, there's not really a whole heap of, in fact, I don't think there's that many at all, Australian people in sort of entertainment or the public eye. There's not a ton of us who are publicly out. It was definitely scary back then. Now, though, looking at it, I'm so glad the people who have come out and the allies as well, like the so many allies, we've sort of all just banded together to get where we are now. And I think that's really awesome in the state of Australia for now. I do think we've got still leaps and bounds to go, but I'm stoked with where we are for now, which is really cool. So, yeah, it's bizarre looking back at it. It was like 5 years ago, I think, I came out. Like
2014 or 13, I think it was. Six years ago. Wow.
Gosh, I've been out of the closet and just shit rainbow ever since. Just killing it.
Tell me about that time. Obviously, 6 years ago doesn't seem so long away. What was it in you that kind of was like, you know what, I just have to do this now. I've got to stop, you know, hiding that part of myself away from the world. What kind of brought you to that, I guess, time in your life?
Really good question. I think I'd been told for a really long time, especially in the acting world, that if you come out, the roles become extremely limited, and because, you know, studio executives or casting people have a really hard time understanding, which does really make me laugh, because they've always said that it's hard for audiences to except that a gay actor, an openly gay actor, could play a straight character, which whenever I've heard that, I'm like, but people watch like Jurassic Park and like Alien. Like they accept that, but they wouldn't accept that a gay guy could play a straight character. Like, that's just not true. I just can't accept that. So to me, it was always like just a blatant homophobic double standard where it was basically just saying, no, we just don't like gay people. So a big part of me was sort of desperate just to shake things up and go, screw you all. I would love to be who I am. And also another thing was I was kind of really jealous of being able to attend events. Like you had to sort of hide away whoever you were seeing. And it was just a bizarre sort of thing to have to hide it is a big part of who you are. It is a huge part of who you are. It doesn't define me as such, but I felt very trapped. I think that's probably a really good word for it. I feel very trapped in the fact that I couldn't be completely who I am and still enjoy the career that I had. So I think that's kind of where it pushed me into doing it. And doing it on YouTube was just a really easy way. I didn't have to do like a press release, or I could just sort of talk and out into the void my way.
And you know, people received the news in the comfort of their own home or into their phone. So, you know, it was considerate on your end.
Yes, exactly.
I had a similar coming out experience too. That's how my family found out. They saw me on TV. So I'm like, you know what? You're getting this in your living room. I'm making it easy for you. You don't have to travel to see me.
Exactly.
There's no coming out. Coming out in the 21st century. It's great.
I love that. Just watch me on the television at 7 o'clock. I have something to tell you.
Bring some popcorn. This is great. I'm really curious to know. So you're an actor. And, you know, you've been in quite a few films, and, you know, I love your background because you've lived in LA and you're back in Sydney. What's it kind of like for an Aussie actor kind of in between continents and trying to pave your way? Because obviously film and TV is different in Australia as it is in America than it is in America, should I say. So how have you kind of found that transition?
Yeah, it's a funny old thing. And as well, it's I think because I started in film, the first thing I ever did was a movie, and the majority of my work has been like film and theater. I've actually done a fair bit of theater and I love the theater, but it's definitely across continents. I love what the US is doing at the moment when it comes to queer characters on screen and queer storylines. I think that is so awesome and quite rare in terms of, we don't see it enough here in Australia, I don't think. I think it would be so awesome to see more sort of queer content over here. But in terms of anything, I think it's such a rat race, the entertainment industry. It's such a strange, it's a bizarre industry to sort of be a part of. Auditioning anywhere is very just bizarre. But I really love working in both here and America. I think the writing here is beautiful. I think we've got such amazing writers and directors and producers. Like the talent pool we have over here is so huge. I think we need to invest more money into it. I think that would be so cool if we had because we've got all the resources here to make some really amazing stuff. I just think we need to ramp up the spending, and we could actually easily give Hollywood a run for its money, I reckon, if we put in the dollar.
I hear.
I mean, for everything, because I'm very cheap. Not kidding. No, don't. Oh my God, we're going to have to edit that out with my agent. Tell me.
No, you're definitely not cheap. You're a very hardworking actor. Was it a couple of years ago, you released a book called Pink Ink?
Yes.
This is amazing. Like, you talked about the talented writers that we have in Australian shores. I have to be honest, I haven't read the book, but it is on my list. I am reading different things. I'm just wrapping up Michelle Obama's book and then on to Harry Cook. Natural transition from the former First Lady to Australia's First Lady. So I just want to...
Yes. Yes. I love that. Yes. I wear that like a cape.
So tell me, Pink Ink, like, was that a lot to do with an identity-based storyline? Tell me a little bit about the book.
I just have such a lot of respect for, I think, people talking about their lives as queer people. I think there was such a huge period of our history that nobody spoke about. Like, it's very recent history that we're sort of allowed to be speaking and not being attacked. Like, it's a very, very recent history. The last sort of 40, 50 years, we've only been sort of allowed to have a voice at all allowed. We've broken through and made people listen, which is amazing. So, and growing up, I was always sort of so aware that there was nobody to kind of, I could just remember thinking, oh my God, is there anyone like me out there? You know what I mean? I'm sure you can, like, there was such a void of people that you could kind of go, oh, so that's a life that I'd love to have. Or that's something that as a gay man or, you know, there was such a huge void there. So my first idea was, oh, it'd be really cool to tell just some funny stories about my life working in entertainment, but also figuring out who I am, I think, because that's such a big part of life in general, but also a queer life, I think, whether you're gay, straight, trans, bi, pans, like there's so many different stories out there. So I really kind of wanted to tell my version of how I figured out who I was, and hopefully, with any luck, people who do read it will go, oh my God, that's, I have that. And oh my God, Harry managed to do this, this, and this. And it is possible as a gay man, or, you know, I think that's what I would love. That's the goal, I think so.
I actually can't wait to read it, because I, just from what you've explained to me, I can also relate to, because you are, as a gay person as well, when there is, I don't want to say limited openness, but limited representatives, like, you're like, okay, what's going on? And, you know, you often hear these stories of, you watch TV figures or whatnot. I remember I got a letter from a boy recently, and he said that he watched Queen and Freddie Mercury's character, and he felt really sad. He goes, well, that's the only representation he saw of a gay man, which is great that he's Freddie Mercury, but he got AIDS, and that's the belief is formed. So it is so important for people like yourself to tell stories. Not that there's anything wrong with Freddie Mercury stories. Obviously, he's an icon and he's amazing. But there's no context to his story other than this was his story. So, yeah, you gave the context in your story, which is amazing. And I'm curious to know, too, given the fact that you've written a book and the fact that you are out there, what's the response been from the community? Have you had, like, letters from people?
Yeah, it was so kind of really emotionally lovely when it first came out. The amount of people who do sort of say, oh my God, thank you so much for writing this, or especially there's a lot of young people who are, you know, trying to make their first steps into the industry, because it's in itself is a terrifying career to choose in any, you know, it's such a unstable ridiculous career choice. Throw in the mix that you're also, you know, you're a minority, it does sort of make you a bit nervous. So the amount of people who, especially when it first came out, were saying, oh my God, thank you so much for at least, you know, showing that you can still have a good career and you can be open and you can be who you are without having to hide a part of yourself. That was really cool. And as well, when I had the book launch, I had it at the Beresford in Sydney, one of the book launches. was a couple of sort of seniors who came up and were like, it's so cool that we've got something, like that we've got to this point, not even about my book, but we've got to a point where people are talking about their careers and lives, and it's not even, you know, the fact that we've even got this is really cool, because it wasn't that long ago that this would have been completely unheard of, that there was a, you know, a gay author talking about his life and his career. Yeah. It's like, it's insane. It's very cool. It's very cool.
Speaking of like the fact that this is kind of unheard of, I'm fascinated by people's morning routines, their mindset, and the people that they share their time with. So tell me, Harry, what's your morning routine? How does Harry Cook start his day?
I actually do this thing which I like to call expensive torture, which is F45. Do you have it over there? Is it over there yet?
F45, yeah. There's one that opened up in Flatiron. I haven't joined yet, obviously, because it's a little bit too much torture for me, but dang.
It's rough, but I've been doing that for like 6 months, and I say it's torture, but it's actually, I love it. Like I've become, it's like a cult. Like I think I've joined it and I can't get out now because I'm too far in. So I get up at like 4 o'clock in the morning and I do this. It's like 45 minutes, really intense, like HIIT training, and then it's done and you can go and eat cake for the day, which is amazing. Like that's the goal, right? Like you just get your workout out of the way and then you can eat a loaf of bread and eat soup all day. Brilliant. And then I come home and I'm writing another book at the moment. So I write a lot. So I'm writing and hanging out with my pup, my little doggy,
who
is my world.
So you have your torture training. You go home and you kind of, you know, you write. Do you have like a meditation or like kind of practice that you do?
Yes. I've recently learned transcendental meditation. Have you heard of that?
Well, I have heard of various aspects of it, but tell me about your experience of it.
Yeah, TM, and I have a friend who lives over there in America, actually, in Ohio. He's a singer, Eli Lieb, and his parents did it. He's been telling me for ages, like, oh, you've got to do it. It's amazing. It's a game changer. It's real. And I was like, all right, I've done meditate. Like, I usually really like meditating. I like mindfulness meditation and stuff. And I was like, so what's the deal? Like, it can't be that different, can it? Surely I can just get that with what I'm doing now. And they're like, no. It's like a whole different thing. It's very, it's a unique meditation system. So I did this course. It was like a 4-day course in Sydney, and they teach you how to, it's very like, I feel very underground and like secretive. They give you a mantra and teach you how to use the mantra.
Right.
Meditate properly. But I've been doing it now for like a couple of months, and it's special. It's definitely kind of cool. I definitely, like, I can see the difference in it, which is very cool. So I meditate twice a day, 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes of an evening. But I also drink a lot of coffee, so that doesn't do me a whole bunch of good. But do you drink coffee? Do you like coffee?
I love my mochas with oat milk.
Oh, with oat milk.
Oat milk's a thing here, not in Australia. I noticed when I went back for Christmas, I'm like, can I get oat milk? They're like, we've got soy and almond, that's it. Sorry, buddy. Yep, soy's fine, almond's fine.
that's the whole spectrum. I used to really love like a flat white or a big milky drink, but I'm doing long blacks now.
You've gone all black. What inspired this change?
I don't know. I think I just need that really big punch in the gut of coffee. So, out of any milk, it's just like, yeah, I think it's, I have like a triple shot Americano, I think they call it at Starbucks.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just a mega, mega cup of just black adrenaline. Coffee.
Wow, that really punches you in the face. I love it.
Yeah, if my heart doesn't stop by midday, then I get to have another one. So that's the goal. Like, if I don't die by the middle of the day, I get to have another one.
Amazing.
The Ginny Show. We tell you things we probably shouldn't.
Hi, this is Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Are you tired of feeling housebound? I sure am. Break free with the new Unbound Cordless Auto Curler from Conair. It's a high-performance auto curler that's rechargeable and gives you up to 60 minutes of cord-free runtime. Just think of all of the incredible hair looks you can create in 60 minutes, unbound, away from your wall. Don't get tied down by cords. Love your look. Live unbound. Check it out at conair.com and search unbound.
The Ginny Show. We welcome you in with open arms and just arms.
So, Harry, tell me, who are the 5 closest people in your life that you spend the most time with?
Five closest people in my life. That's a really good question. Can I count my dog as one?
Absolutely. I should actually say, who are the five biggest influences in your life rather than people? You're absolutely right. I need to reword that question.
Okay. Yeah, no, influence. Oh, I like that. Oh, no, that's really cool. And people as well. That's wonderful. Yeah. I have a really great circle of friends, really amazing circle of friends. And I have to say, I'm going to count three off real quick. My mom, dad, and my brother, Max, they're my everything. They're very, very cool people and just a great support network around me. My dog, I'm going to throw in a few more. So that's four. And also I've got two really, really close friends, Haley and Tanya, who I think are like sisters. So I would call them more like sisters. So I would say they're probably my, in terms of like really, really great people around me, they're sort of in the top five and six. But I'm very lucky because I've got an incredible agency who look after me in Sydney, and I signed with them in January. I'm doing this shout out because I'm so impressed by them. When I met with them, we had a big chat, and it was the first time I'd had a chat with an agency ever, like anywhere in the world, Sydney, England, America, where they were like, we really love that you've come out. We really love everything you've done, and we're really behind you. Like, we really would love to get you some more work, and we're really interested in what you're all about. And I thought that was just so cool in this day and age to have an agency who they want to make money as well. Like, that's the whole goal. And for them to sort of back you, I think, as an artist and as a performer is very, very cool. So they're also big influence. Very happy.
Fantastic. It looks like you've got some wonderful people around you. And I think the key word that kind of stands out for me, Harry, is you feel very supported, and you feel really kind of, I guess, you feel like there's people that have got you back, which is so important with any endeavor that you do. So I'm curious, considering support seems to be such a big driver for you, how would you define happiness for you? Like, is it your three-shot, triple-shot Americano? Is it just sitting with your dog and doing transcendental meditation? Like, what is your definition of happiness?
I love that question.
It's a big loaded question.
it's a big loaded question. But I love it. Yeah, I think it is. Like, those little moments in life. Like, you can have some real big success, I guess, which is a bit, like, you know, when you like, if you get a movie or if you're working on something that you never imagined you do, that's really awesome. It does fleet. Nothing's there forever. But I think those little moments, like you say, like just hanging out with my dog or my family or watching a movie or just chilling at the beach I'm a bit of a hippie. So I really like just the very, very basic, simple moments in life where you kind of go, oh, this is what it's all about. This is really great. I'm content. I think that's really cool. Going for walks and stuff and hanging at the beach. And it sounds kind of like I'm 28. That's 28 next month. Not there yet. But that does sound kind of like, okay. But I really do think that that's something very special in life. And I don't think enough people kind of do aspire to that. Like, when it comes to happiness, I think it is that the little moments in life that are the most special.
No, I totally agree. I think people have this expectation that happiness, one, has to be a really big moment. And secondly, it has to be permanent. And I think you just explained that beautifully, how it's these little moments that may come in, it's ebb and flows, but in that moment, that present moment is where the happiness comes from.
Absolutely. And I think, you hit the nail on the head, the ebb and flows. And I think if you're always looking for, which I am guilty of in the past, where you're constantly like, oh, I need to get a bigger movie next time. And I need to make more money if I'm going to be happy. And if I'm not making that salary, then I'm definitely not. I'm not doing as well as my friend who's making that amount, or my friend who's doing two TV shows and a movie. I'm only doing one movie. And it's like you constantly, and it's funny, actually. I was talking to a friend the other day about the creative industries in general, whether like radio or television or anything in the creative field. When, like, a regular job, if you're a lawyer, that's your job, and you're a good lawyer, or you know, that's kind of your career. But when you're in a creative field, I feel like the expectation of you is so high for everyone in every industry. Everybody's sort of, well, so what are you working on next? Or also, so how many books did you sell? Or how big was your movie at the box office? Or so have you worked with anybody hugely famous? Have you won any awards? Like, there's so many. Whereas a regular job, you're kind of like, I go to work 9 to 5, which is great, which is, I'm not knocking that, but that's how
that model works. And I go to work and I make my living and I buy a house and I have a dog. Whereas it's always in a creative industry, it's so have you won anything lately? Or so what is the next thing you do? And how many times are you planning on doing that this year? It's a bizarre kind of field. But, you know, it's also kind of wonderful.
I think you hit the nail on the head there too, Harry, because it's almost like in a creative field, the merit of success or the measurement of success, there isn't anything defined other than awards or bestseller titles or, you know, some form of accolade of I worked with X actor or Y actor or whatnot. Sure. And it's very true. When you are in a kind of a traditional job format, you've got the traditional expectations and measurable, you know, KPIs or whatever you want to call them that society understand. But when it comes to an act, I mean, you could be doing your thing, and by just listening to what you've done, you're pretty successful. You've written a book, you're writing your second one, you're in a pretty decent agency who looks after you really well. You're looking for more endeavors in your life. So, I mean, again, I think also what you touched on there about happiness and also perception is, I think when you're always seeking something outside, that's when you're not happy, because I think happiness stems from gratitude, and also you need to be somewhat present at that stage.
Oh, perfect. That is so true. I really love that. Oh my God, we could chat for hours. That's so true.
We've got to do a part two to this, definitely. But I'm just fascinated by people's concept of happiness, because some people find it happiness so without, and I find that really fascinating. I'm like, what makes you that way? Did your parents teach you something? Did society teach you something? Did your school teach you something?
And I think as well, like school or home life, or there is that sort of, I totally agree, because it's like career or beauty and those sort of things. You're never ever going to be famous forever. Kim Kardashian is huge now. One day she won't be. Like, and that's not a bad thing. But if you base your life totally on that, I think, on, like you say, those external things, you'll never really be that happy. Yeah, it's a such an unattainable thing to reach for. It's such an unattainable thing to reach for. And fame as well. Like, that's such a gross, strange, toxic thing to try to, not saying that it doesn't help or that there's cool aspects of it, but it's definitely not, I don't think it's a very healthy thing to aspire to be. And I feel like so many people nowadays aspire to be famous. There's no, like, remember I was watching Sing It in the Rain last night or the night before last, and I was like, these people, they're tap dancing, they're like, they're singing, they're acting, like, that you had to work so hard to work back then. Like, you really have, now you just sort of, it's so easy to be famous nowadays. It's not really like it's not a skill anymore.
No, and it's also not long-lived. Like, you can have five-minute YouTube sensation and then next year you've forgotten about it. But the whole thing that you're talking about, it's the keeping up with the Joneses or keeping up with the Kardashians, as you were saying. It's kind of that whole thing of the comparisonitis is like, oh, people are so looking without for that validation or that happiness. And it's not going to come. And and anything with happiness, with anything, it's not going to last forever. It's got to ebb and flow.
I love that. Love it. Love it.
So, Harry, tell me, you've told me about your morning routine. You've told me about who you spend the most time with. I'm curious to know, what were you taught as a kid about what happiness is or what life is all about?
Oh, I love that question.
Loaded one again. That's how we roll here.
I love it. I love these questions. They're so cool. I really appreciate these kind of questions, because they get to the meat and bones. Growing up, my parents were really... I speak it in the book. I actually do talk about how hard it was on my dad when I first came out. My dad was not happy at all. Like, it was a real struggle for him when I first came out. But he was so, so supportive, and always has been. Like, both my parents have always been such supportive parents when it comes to going after what you want in life. And you know, going and being happiness, I think, was always defined as, I mean, if you're healthy and you know, you look after yourself and you try and be a really good person, and that was always sort of the baseline of how to be happy. I don't think I was never taught you need to make millions of dollars. It was never about what car you drove or what clothes you wore, like, never any of that. And I'm so glad, because I still don't, like, I'm really not that fussed on the material stuff in life as much as the kind of, like, experience of it. But yeah, mum and dad were always very, very, very
very cool, actually, looking back, growing up, because there was never any crazy expectations at school. There was not like, you need to get the highest grades or you're going to, or we're going to be so, like, it was always just do it, do as hard, work as hard as you can. That was sort of the,
yeah,
as hard as you can. Don't burn out. Don't hurt yourself. Just try as hard as you can. And if you try, then that's sort of the main thing. And I think I have more of a drive for that. I think I have more drive because I'm not being pushed, because I'm like, I really want to do it. I think if you're pushed really hard, it actually can sometimes do the opposite. You're like,
you rebel. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, your parents have to be cool if they bought you a Batman costume. Like, you
know. Exactly. And it was a very good Batman costume as well. I really got to find it.
You got to find it. We got to have like a throwback party, Harry, and we can wear
we
it.
Do.
Yeah, I mean, I might be accused or arrested for indecent exposure because it's a little. Your friend's put on a bit of KG, so it might be a crop top. Probably can't get away with it. Definitely, we're going to do it.
I'll do it. We'll do it. We'll have to do it. Arrested or not, I will come to New York and we will make it happen. I do really want to come to New York, though. My God, I really miss it over there.
Definitely come. Absolutely. Well, I'm kind of figuring out like what we're going to do next with the show. And I have a couple of questions for you in terms of. So you talked to me about, you know, your coming out story. I really love that identity. I want to know who's left a heartprint on your life, like someone who's really like touched you, and not in a creepy way, but left a real big heartprint in your life.
Oh, that's really sweet. Heartprint on my life. Actually, you know, no, I do know what I'm going to say. And this sounds really sappy and lame, but Gina Davis, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, she was the first movie I ever did. She played my mom, and she's has been since such a beautiful friend, and not just a friend, like a mentor, and just a really just you talked about like what it, like who taught you as well how to you know what happiness is and how to just sort of navigate the world. I think I owe a lot to her, just about how, especially in an acting career, how to behave. I think I'm so grateful that I got to work with her first, because she's such a professional but so grounded. And I think I'm so grateful that I didn't get someone who, you know, shouted at the crew or was just, you know, she's so down to earth and so kind and just a really decent human being, and also fights really hard for representation in media. She's got a foundation called the Gina Davis Institute on Gender in Media, and it's all about female depictions on screen and how bad it is and how it hasn't actually changed, and how over-sexualized, you know, even young kids' films are for young women and stuff, and how, but she's got, yeah, my big thing, I think she's left such a huge impact on me because she's just taught me a lot. About just a lot. She's just a very cool person. Yeah, I've got a lot of love for her and everything that she does. I think she's just a rock star. That's what I think.
Yeah. Well, next time I see a Gina Davis film, I'll definitely have a different perspective on her, given that I know that now. That's wonderful.
And definitely check out her institute, because it's like some of the stuff is so interesting. I've like, and this has been going, I think about 10 years she's had this institute, but she's the figures of sort of male to female characters on screen, even in like crowd scenes, it's something, I think it's like 17% of female or something, in crowd scenes. Like it's the... And her whole motto is, which I love in terms of not just female representation, but queer representation on screens. Her thing is, if she can see it, she can be it. I think that's so true for young queer people as well. If you can't see yourself represented on screen or in television or in movies or in books or in any kind of public sphere, you feel like you're not there. You feel like you're completely invisible. And I think that's, growing up, I felt invisible because I was like, there's nobody out there. There's literally nothing to see. So I think it's so important. So cool.
That's so true. And I think, you know, a testament to the whole Me Too movement as well. It was just kind of an underlying fact that there needs to be more women at the table in those positions making those decisions, because women are going to know what other women care about, or, you know, LGBT people are going to know what other LGBT, because we're in that shoes, we have that empathy. And it's fascinating to me that that's still an issue that we're talking about. But I know that it's an evolving process, and over time it will happen. Because, and I guess the way to do it, Harry, is to kind of keep practicing that in our own lives, and hopefully it spreads. So absolutely. This has been absolutely amazing. Tell me too, Harry, what kind of books would you recommend people to read? Is there any kind of books that have really impacted you that you think could be helpful to others?
I loved Michelle Obama's book. I've read her.
You've read Becoming? I'm nearly finished, so no spoilers, but so far I loved it. I've loved it so far.
Just incredible. So I think everybody should read that just because. I read a lot of fiction. I've read The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay. It's such a LGBT-themed book. It's only out, I think it's out last year or something, but I read it. And they're turning it in. I think Amy Poehler's production company is turning it into a TV show. But that was a really beautiful book. Goes between the AIDS crisis in the 80s and 2014, I think, and just how people's lives. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. This is a really good question. I love these questions about books. You're gonna be like, Harry, shut up. We've had enough. Too many books. I really love. What did I read? I read one the other day. An Uninhabitable Earth. It was like about climate change. I read everything. I really enjoyed that one. Yeah, read more, everyone.
So clearly reading and writing is your passion and how you communicate. I love that. Harry Cook, thank you so much for joining me on The Ginny Show. Always an absolute treat being in your presence and talking to you.
Oh, my God.
I love catching up with you. But tell the good people of The Ginny Show how we can find you out there on the internet sphere.
On the web. I'm on Instagram at Harry J. Cook on Instagram. I'm at Harry Cook on Twitter and facebook.com/HarryCook. But thank you. Honestly, thank you so much for having me. I love you. And I'm just so stoked to be on your show. I love this show.
Love having you on The Ginny Show, Harry. We'll have to have you back and we can talk more happiness then.
I love that. The Ginny
Show.
Hi, this is Brooke DeVard from Naked Beauty. Are you tired of feeling housebound? I sure am. Break free with the new Unbound Cordless Auto Curler from Conair. It's a high-performance auto curler that's rechargeable and gives you up to 60 minutes of cord-free runtime. Just think of all of the incredible hair looks you can create in 60 minutes, unbound, away from your wall. Don't get tied down by cords. Love your look, live unbound. Check it out at conair.com and search unbound.